His friend from Los Alamos, and the woman who had taken care of Tony as an infant for 3 months, was one of her regular drinking companions. The Schurs had moved to Princeton in 1946, and soon after the Oppenheimers moved into Olden Manor, Kitty made a habit of dropping by Pat's home 2 or 3 times a week. Kitty was clearly lonely. She would arrive at 11 in the morning, recalled Schur, and wouldn't leave until 4 in the afternoon, after having consumed a lot of Schur's scotch.
But one day Pat announced she just couldn't afford to replace the liquor. "Oh, how stupid of me," Kitty said. "I'll bring my own bottle and you'll just keep it aside for me." Kitty's friendships were at once intense and ephemeral. She would latch on to someone and bare her soul in a torrent of intimacy.
Schur saw her do this repeatedly.
She'd tell her new friend absolutely everything about herself, including her sex life.
"I mean, she just had to talk about this sort of thing all the time," recalled Schur.
She could be a good friend, but she was always conscious of being a good friend. And inevitably, at some point, she would turn on her friend and publicly denigrate her. "Kitty had a certain need to hurt people," Hobson said. Kitty had always been accident-prone, and her drinking contributed to a string of such episodes. In Princeton, she regularly had minor auto accidents. Almost every night she fell asleep in bed smoking. Her bedding was full of cigarette holes. One night she awoke startled. The room was on fire, but she put it out with a fire extinguisher that she or Robert had wisely placed in the bedroom. Oddly enough, Robert rarely intervened. He instead reacted to his wife's self-destructive behavior with stoic resignation. He knew of Kitty's traits, observed Frank Oppenheimer, but was unwilling to admit them, again perhaps because he couldn't admit failure.
On one occasion, Abraham Pice was talking with Oppenheimer in his office when the two men saw Kitty walking, clearly tipsy, across the lawn from Olden Manor. As she approached the door to his office, Robert turned to Pice and said, "Don't go away." "It was moments like these," Pice later wrote, "when I hurt for him." In his pity for Robert, Pice nevertheless could not understand why his friend tolerated such a woman. "Quite independently from her drinking," Pice wrote, "I have found Kitty the most despicable female I have ever known because of her cruelty."
Hobson saw past Kitty's failings and she understood why Robert loved her. He accepted her for who she was and knew she would never really change her ways. Robert once confided to Hobson that, prior to Princeton, he had consulted a psychiatrist about Kitty. In an extraordinary admission, he said he had been advised to check her into an institution, at least for a time. This he could not do. Instead, he would be Kitty's doctor, nurse, and psychiatrist. He told Hobson that he had taken this decision with his eyes open and that he accepted the consequences of it. Freeman Dyson had a similar observation. Robert just liked Kitty the way she was, and he wouldn't have tried to force a different way of life on her any more than she would onto him. I would say that Oppenheimer himself was certainly completely dependent on her. She was really the rock on which he stood. I think for him to have tried to treat her as a clinical case and try to reorganize her life, I think that would have been just out of character for him and out of character for her, too. Another Princeton friend, the journalist Robert Strunsky, agreed. He was just as loyal to her as anybody could be. He really wanted to protect her as much as anything. He resented any criticism of her.